Get your roof fixed now. Get a free bid. Call £250. Say Pioneer Roofing. That's Pioneer Roofing.
Listen and you'll know.
First of all, if you haven't heard this yet, I love this.
Rod Arquette on Talk Radio 105.9 KNRS.
Over the, I don't know how long, over the past several years now, and maybe more so since Joe Biden became president of the United States and the radical left is really taking over this country. How many times have you said to yourself, you just don't recognize this country anymore? You know, it is not the country that many of us grew up in. It is not the country that we continue to support each and every day, despite the nut jobs on the left who are running the darn thing. I mean, how many of you continually ask yourself or say to somebody, you know, we don't recognize this country anymore? Well, there are two reasons for that, and I'll explain those in just a minute. How are you, everybody? Welcome to the Rod Arquette Show on this Thursday afternoon, right here on Utah's Talk Radio 105.9 KNRS. Listen, and you'll know, jam-packed show again today. Coming up in a little bit, well, I'll tell you what's coming up here in just a second, but I want to outline the last hour of the show because Steve Moore will join us. We'll also hear from Sim Gill and State Representative Paul Ray, and we'll tell you about tourism in Southern Utah. What's going on right now in Southern Utah? We'll talk with the head of Ruby's Inn down there at the mouth of Bryce Canyon National Park about how tourism is holding up during this summer. It's been a crazy, crazy year down there as well. Now, we invite you to be a part of the program, 888-570-8010, 888-570-8010 on your cell phone, dial #250 and say, hey, Rod. Now, do you recognize the country, this country anymore? Because a lot of people keep on saying they don't recognize it anymore. Let me share with you a couple of reasons why. Today we have a country that is now being ruled not by Joe Biden, because he doesn't know what he's doing, in my opinion, but by a small radical minority that couldn't care less about the U.S. Constitution. They don't care anything about it. Joe Biden made it clear when he caved to the squad on Tuesday. And what he did was push the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to ban evictions once again, knowing full well that he was likely breaking the law and violating his oath of office. He knows that this eviction moratorium, which came to an end and is going to come to an end, is unconstitutional. But he's going to continue it, despite the fact that the courts have ruled it is unconstitutional, because he wants to help people. He even admitted just a short time ago at the White House, at an event where he drove around a Jeep electric vehicle, I guess. I'm not sure what he drove. But he was asked about it. He said, if we can just, you know, it's going through the appellate process. If we can delay it for 2 or 3 months, it will get people the help they need, even though he is breaking the law. That's what he's doing. He is breaking the law. He took an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States. And the courts have ruled that what he is doing is unconstitutional. Now, in June, the Supreme Court said that congressional legislation would be needed to extend the ban, which had been in place since August of 2020, beyond July. Congress, meanwhile, clearly opted to let it expire. That was Congress's choice. House Democrats simply couldn't muster enough votes to extend it, and it faced an even tougher battle in the Senate. So the body that we elect, the legislative branch that we elect, said we're going to let this expire. Now, those in the Democratic Party, the radical left, went right after Joe Biden and said, don't you dare let this happen. Don't you dare, Joe, even think about it. Because if you don't stand up for this eviction moratorium, we are going to come after you like you wouldn't believe. So what did Joe Biden do? He caved. He said, okay, I know the courts have ruled that it's up to Congress to extend this. They aren't going to do it. And I know the nation's courts have said It's unconstitutional. I am going to do it anyway. I don't care what the Constitution says. And I'm going to continue with this eviction moratorium. Now, people who haven't paid their rent for how long still don't have to pay it today. But what about the landlords? What about people like many of you out there? Maybe you invest in real estate. Maybe you own properties, and that's the income that you have to live on from month to month, all the rent that is coming into you. You're out of luck. You're SOL, folks. Sorry about it, but, you know, Joe Biden doesn't care about you. He doesn't care about you in the least, but he will even break the law because he doesn't care about you. Yet we have a president who put his hand on a very large Bible back in January and said he would uphold the Constitution of the United States. And now he is spitting in its face. That's one example of why you don't recognize this country anymore and who this country is. Now, the other one has to deal with critical race theory. Critical race theory is one of the most divisive, hotly contested issues in the country right now, next to COVID and mask and, you know, vaccination and all that. CRT, critical race theory in schools, has a lot of parents upset, and they're finally taking notice. Well, here you have a case in Pennsylvania where the president of a local school board there is now facing calls for him to step down after he cut off an Iranian mother who immigrated to this country who spoke out against critical race theory. Now, her name is Anita Engerian. She is an immigrant, a mother of three. And she went before this Pennsylvania school board in the Westchester area and spoke against critical race theory. And went after the chairman, the president of the board, accusing him of lying to people. I want you to listen to this exchange, and then I'll explain what happened.
I, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr., do solemnly swear.
I, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr.
I don't even care what CRT stands for, but dividing families, teachers, and I'm sure your staff members under something that nobody's clear what it is about, it's unfair. I resent being here and having to post on my Facebook and my text my friends, my very good friend Aaron, who stood up and spoke, and say, what is CRT? Why do I have to worry about it? I sent my kids to study mathematics, literature, history, and I want them to study every kind of history because that's how I am. My house, actually, as a matter of fact, is known as the International House of Pancakes. You know why? Because my kids' best friends are black, Brazilian, Mexican, Muslim, Australian, English, white, purple, black. What are we doing to each other? And sir, you did a great job for 12 years, but you're leaving a mess. You have brought division to us. This is not the way it's supposed to be. Since when my twin, 13 years old, are supposed to save the world? They're supposed to be going to college.
Anita, you're a time.
No.
Yes, you are.
Because for 12 years you made a mess, and you didn't even have the guts to tell me that you were the chair of the board. And you stood there, you said it. I want to know, are you teaching CRT to our teachers? And if not, what did you say?
Now, you know what happened there? Chris McKeown, who is the board president, who told her just a second ago that your time is up. As she continued on, he got up from his chair, walked around the board meeting and the dais, went down to the podium, and took her microphone away from her. And basically said, you're out of time, you've said enough. Do you recognize your country today? You're wondering what's going on? It's examples like this, where people cannot express their opinions anymore, and a president of the United States can violate the law. Do you recognize your country anymore? All right, more coming up on the Rod Arkent Show. We'll delve more into the eviction moratorium coming up next, right here on the Rod Arkent Show and Utah's Talk Radio 105.9 KNRS. Listen, and you'll know. Brand new company we want to introduce you today on Center Stage here on the Rod Argent Show. We're talking about the Training Room. They're based in American Fork, and James is joining us right now to tell us all about it. All right, the Training Room. There are thousands of gyms out there, as you well know, James. What is the Training Room, and what difference does it offer people?
So the Training Room is something that we started about 3 years ago because we wanted to have a better gym experience. So my business partners come from the fitness industry working in larger gyms, mm-hmm. and a lot of them are too crowded. They have broken equipment. They're dirty. They're just not pleasant to be in. So we wanted to create a different experience that was more comfortable for people, something that they would actually like to be at every day, that treated them like they actually belong there.
How would you describe the experience as being different? What makes a difference in your opinion, James?
Well, so one of the things people comment on is when you walk in the door, the front desk staff know your name. Mm-hmm. You're not just one of 10,000 members. They'll mm-hmm. be like, oh, hey, Rod, it's good to see you today. Mm-hmm. And they might even chat with you because you just went on vacation. And it's, in that regard, it's much more personalized. And then inside, you have a lot more space to use, about five times as much space as any other gym per person. It's just comfortable. It's clean. Like I said, all the equipment's brand new and great shape. It's just a fun place to be.
Yeah. Now, oftentimes when people go to a gym, they're reluctant to do so because they're embarrassed. They don't know exactly what to do. They see these really healthy people over here, and they aren't that healthy. Do you try and make them more comfortable in that regard?
Absolutely. So we really want everyone, every fitness level, to feel comfortable there. And so even our members will reach out to each other. You could go up and ask anybody, say, hey, what are you doing today? And they'll talk to you. They'll socialize with you. They'll help you figure out what you're doing. If you don't know what you're doing, whether it's a staff member or even another gym member, they'll make you feel comfortable.
All right. Now, I know today you've got a special offer for people. What is that offer right now, James?
So, for one, you can try your first week for free when you mention KNRS. Or if you come in and you're already a member of another gym, we'll actually pay your cancellation fee if you want to leave that gym.
All right. If you want to check it out, it's the Training Room in American Fork. You can go online, ttr.com, ttrfit.com, to get all the information, or give them a call, 385-254-5631.
Rewatch podcasts. Just open the app and search Rewatch, the free iHeart app. Number one for music, radio, and podcasts all in one.
The state of Utah, welcome back to the Rod Argent Show. The state of Utah was one of 26 states, I believe, that at the end of June ended the enhanced unemployment benefits that people were getting. And the thinking behind it was that if we could end those unemployment benefits, people would want to go back to work because we had such a employee shortage here in the state of Utah. Well, a new study is out taking a look at that issue, both nationally and here in the state of Utah. We'll talk about that coming up at 4:35, in just about 15 minutes here on the Rod Argent Show. All right, I want to take you back to January 20th of this year. It was the swearing-in of Joe Biden become the 46th president of the United States. Listen to this.
I, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr., do solemnly swear.
I, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr., do solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully execute.
That I will faithfully execute.
The office of President of the United States.
Office of President of the United States.
And will, to the best of my ability.
Will, to the best of my ability.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
Now, I know many of you know that is the presidential oath of office, as prescribed by Article 2 of the U.S. Constitution, right? It has been sworn or affirmed to by every president. Now, there have been a few presidents here or there who have kind of ignored it or violated the oath, but none so blatantly as Joe Biden with the eviction moratorium. Joining us on our Newsmaker line to talk about that is Philip Holloway. He is the founder of the Holloway Law Group. Podcast host of Sworn, a true crime podcast. He also writes it in Town Hall about this today. Philip, thanks for joining us this afternoon. You know, other presidents have done this in the past, maybe a little bit, but not as blatantly as Joe Biden has. Have they, Philip?
Oh, it's spectacular. I stated in my piece that he's rhetorically taken the oath of office and just torn it to shreds by admittedly doing something that he knows to be unlawful.
How can he get away with this, Philip?
Well, I think the short answer to that difficult question is that he can get away with it through sheer force of the power of his office. Now, I don't think ultimately he's going to be successful in the long run, and I think he knows that too. But the point that I was hopefully trying to make in this piece is that it will be struck down eventually by the courts, but the president is counting on the built-in delay that always is associated with litigation efforts. It could be months, it could be years before we get a final ruling from an appellate court on any specific litigation, which, by the way, is already firing up. This new eviction moratorium is already being challenged, but until it works its way through the appellate process, it is going to be in place, and landlords are basically out in the cold. They have no remedy except to take it to court.
So is the President of the United States saying, look, I'm trying to help people, and if I have to break the law, ignore the Constitution, as long as I'm helping people, in my mind, and hopefully in the mind of the American people, it is okay to do this. Is that what he's doing?
Well, yes, and specifically he said, and I quote, the bulk of the constitutional scholarship says that it's not likely to pass constitutional muster. Think about that. That's a confession. That's an admission that he knows that he's breaking the law, that he's breaking his oath of office, which is to support and defend the Constitution. If you have the bulk, as he says, of the constitutional scholarship, and I think it's more than that, I don't think anybody who is intellectually honest says that this is anything other than unconstitutional. If he's willing to go that far, the question is, what else is he willing to do? People can say, well, this isn't a big deal. This is just about helping people out who are having a hard time and they can't pay their rent. But this is actually about something much bigger. It is about a president using the power of the office through sheer force of will to impose that will extrajudicially, extra-legally upon the masses. Okay? And that, if you think of it in those broader terms, it really is a striking problem, truly.
Is Joe Biden and his administration telling property owners in this country nowadays, Philip, that you no longer control your property, the federal government will tell you what you can do with your property? Does it come down to that basic fact?
Yes, it does. That's true. You know, rental contracts, whether it's me renting an office space or you renting an apartment or renting a home, or even a VRBO, vacation rental. Those are contracts. That's an agreement between usually two people or maybe a person and a company, but it's a private contract between private entities. And these are matters of intrastate commerce. This is not interstate commerce, so arguably you don't even have a federal hook to even give Congress the power to act. I'd go far as to say that. But we're talking about the not just the federal, the executive branch. Okay, taking over and getting in between the relationship of the party to a contract, the lessor and the lessee, and the federal government just coming in and saying, I'm going to cancel this obligation, we're going to allow someone to occupy property without paying for it, essentially indefinitely, just because we can.
Philip,
a problem.
Yeah, that sure is a problem. Philip, have you ever seen, prior to Joe Biden, any other president so blatantly ignoring the Constitution as this guy is right now?
Yeah, we had President Obama with his pen and DACA, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, you know, we've seen this before, but I don't recall, and it's possible that I've just missed it, but I don't recall President Obama ever admitting that what he was trying to do with his pen was unlawful. So basically, Joe Biden said, you know, the quiet part out loud. I heard another author use those terms. I forget who off the top of my head. But basically, you know, he's admitting that what he's doing is unlawful, and he just doesn't care. He's doing it for political expediency. He's literally sacrificing the rule of law upon the altar of political gain.
How about those people who have property that they own and they rent out to support or to provide them with income, the people who invest in real estate? Is Joe Biden just thumbing his nose at them right now and said, hey, tough, we got to help out other people. Tough luck. Figure it out yourself.
You know, I got a call just today at my law office from someone who I know that owning rental property and maintaining them and collecting those rents is a big part of this individual's livelihood. That's almost all that he does. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And so he's lucky. I think most of the folks are paying their rent, but there's a significant handful that just won't. And when they see this news, they just, oh, guess what? I didn't know. I don't have to pay my rent this month. And he's stuck. There's nothing he can do except what he does have to do. He still has to pay taxes. He still has to take care of the upkeep. He still got to respond when the refrigerator breaks or the anything else mechanically needs to be tended to. So he still has those obligations, but he doesn't get the reciprocal benefit of a contract, which is to receive what we call consideration, or in this case, receive money in exchange for access and services related to those properties.
Why aren't people more up in arms about this, Philip?
People don't know. People don't understand the big picture. They're like, this helps the greedy land. This protects people from the greedy landowners. Okay, but that's not who landlords are. They're your next door neighbors. They're your friends. They're your people that you go to church with and otherwise socialize with that have monies tied up in rental property, or maybe it's a centerpiece of their retirement portfolio. So maybe people who are not able to otherwise work and they've invested in real estate and they have the rug just pulled out from under them.
It's amazing.
So those people certainly are aware of what's going on, but the general public, we're too focused on, whether or not our kids are going to go to face-to-face school, or whether we're going to have a vaccine mandate, or if our kids have to wear a mask while they're in school. We're too busy arguing about those things to really think about the magnitude, and it's really a tremendous event, what the president has done. But people are distracted, and they're not focusing on the big picture here.
Where do you see this going, Philip? I just see this story coming across today that a judge today has ordered the administration now to respond to the lawsuit from the Coalition of Housing Groups challenging the eviction moratorium. Where do you see this going, and how fast is this going to move?
Well, a federal judge, of course, if you file a lawsuit, the government's going to have to respond. That's just, I don't think it's very big news that a court is ordering the defendant, in this case the government, to respond to a lawsuit. But we're talking about, if this is a lawsuit in a federal district court, this is just the opening salvo. This is the first shot in a war. This was already litigated. It went up to the Supreme Court, and we had this really bizarre ruling by the Supreme Court with this crazy concurrence by Justice Kavanaugh, who said, "Well, yeah, it's clearly illegal, but I'm gonna vote against ending it anyway." So we're basically having to start over. So if a federal judge says to the government, "You've got to respond to this lawsuit," that's just the first salvo. I mean, there's a long way to go to get back to the Supreme Court.
On our Newsmaker line, that's Philip Holloway. He is founder of the Holloway Law Group, talking about the eviction notice and the fact that basically Joe Biden has thumbed his nose at the U.S. Constitution. The Washington Post even came out today, said Biden can't do this. And oh, by the way, Biden is heating up the war between him and Ron DeSantis. The Florida governor, when asked about DeSantis, is telling Joe Biden to do his job today. Biden responded,
"Watch podcasts. Just open the app and search Rewatch, the free iHeart app. Number one for music, radio, and podcasts all in one." Rod Arquette Show on Talk Radio 105.9 KNRS.
About half of all U.S. states decided to withdraw federal funds for the unemployed months early to encourage out-of-work residents to go find a job. But apparently there is now mounting evidence that shows the policy gambit just hasn't paid off. 26 states announced their intent to end federal pandemic-era benefits starting in May. Here in Utah, I think we ended them in June. They officially pulled out in waves in June and July, okay? But there are new reports out that show ending the unemployment benefits did not get people back to work. The same thing happened here in Utah. As a matter of fact, joining us On our Newsmaker line to talk about that right now is Nathan Siegert. He is an associate professor in the finance department at the University of Utah. Nathan, thanks for joining us. You've been looking at what happened here in Utah in the in stopping those enhanced unemployment benefits. Nathan, what did you find?
So we do an economic survey and a business survey for the state of Utah, and this really provides a nice pulse of the economic conditions, looking both from households' experiences and businesses' experiences. And what we found was, overwhelmingly, what we found is the economy in Utah has really bounced back well from the COVID-19 pandemic. And so I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of these states started to expire these extra boosted benefits. The benefits are still there, just the boosted benefits, because the economy in Utah is doing so well.
And the fact that the economy is doing so well, how does that play into a potential employee saying, well, I'm going to be a little more picky, I'm going to take my time, the economy is doing well, or are there just not enough people who are even using these benefits that it would have made much of a difference?
Yeah, so the Utah economy is doing so well that the unemployment rate is so low that there isn't a lot of slack in terms of labor. Now, I think a lot of people hoped that by lowering these benefits, because they maybe weren't needed because the economy was doing well, this would lead to a surge of new people coming out to employment, maybe accepting lower wages, just being willing to sort of jump back into the labor force faster. And we didn't find that. So both from the consumer side, they didn't say that they were willing to accept lower wages. From the business side, they didn't see this surge. And I think that makes sense, again, because the economy is doing so well. Now, I think something that's super interesting is when you do these things, there could be unintended consequences. And something that I don't think anyone expected but ended up coming out in the surveys was sort of the importance of these boosted benefits to entrepreneurial activities. And so what we saw was a lot of people use those benefits to go out on their own. And I think that's super interesting moving forward when we think about trying to encourage small businesses, what we can do on that front.
So you were saying people would use these extra benefits, what, Nathan, to start their own business or team up with others and try and start a business? Is that what you saw?
That's what people are saying in the surveys. So a lot of people are said that as a result of the boosted benefits actually going away, that actually they would sort of move away from some of the entrepreneurial startups that they had started during the pandemic. And actually a really interesting fact about this last 12 months is it saw the most businesses started in the United States pretty much ever. And so that's not usually what you see in recessions. And I think one of the reasons was these boosted benefits allowed people to have the liquidity to go out and try their hand at their entrepreneurial interest. And so I think that's a really good thing and something that's super interesting that we saw all that new business activity.
What kind of a bargaining position do you feel in looking at these numbers, Nate? What kind of a bargaining position are employees in today? The economy is doing so well. Do employees feel they can be a little more picky because the economy is so good and they can find a job almost anywhere? What kind of a position is that putting employees in?
Yeah, definitely. From the employee side, they're saying that they are looking for higher wages, they're looking for better benefits, and more flexible work arrangements. And I think it's also interesting from the business side. Businesses said that they saw themselves increasing sort of opening wage offers and larger benefits as a result of this as well. So I think, you know, these government programs that went into place really did help spark a great economy, not just in Utah, but in the U.S. in general.
Mm-hmm. Is there any sign right now that they will eventually decide to get back to work? Are they still being picky? Any idea at this point, Nate, where these unemployed employees are right now and what they're doing?
Well, again, the unemployment rate is very low, so
yeah,
it's not
yeah.
that there's a lot of people looking for work and not gaining it. I think you're seeing people search from the job they're in now, so they're moving from job to job. That can be a positive thing in terms of better matching, finding people and job and workplaces that fit sort of their expertise better. And I think you're seeing sort of movement. I mean, that's one of the things that you saw with the pandemic was people moved out of different cities and into new places, and you definitely saw that in Utah as well. And so I think we're all kind of waiting to see what kind of role work from home is going to have coming out of this last year. Are we going to see more influx of people moving to, you know, wonderful states like Utah?
Mm-hmm. Nathan, from an employer perspective, and you just drive around this area and you see help wanted signs all over the place. Employers are really looking for employees. What kind of pressure are they under, do you think, now to be able to provide better wages or better benefits to get people to work for them? Because, you, like I said, you see help wanted signs all over the place right now. Is there real pressure on employers now?
Definitely. I mean, I definitely see that that pressure is there. I think it's actually been nice that, you know, these surveys, one of the things is we could see this coming a couple months out, that there was going to be this pressure. And I think the business community has responded pretty well, actually, in, like I said, they're saying that they're increasing their wages, they're increasing their benefits, and that's just out of necessity to bring in the workers. But I think that's a very good thing, because you'd be worried that if there were frictions there, if businesses didn't react in that way, that the economy would sort of start to slow down as we didn't get sort of the employment. But that is definitely something that we're watching still, in terms of we don't want the economy to overheat, right? And so there's still sort of questions about inflation and overheating, but we're not seeing that yet. But that's, again, something that these surveys are really helping us just keep the pulse on.
Nathan Siegert, he's an associate professor of finance at the University of Utah. More coming up on the Rod Arquette Show. Taking center stage today on the Rod Arquette Show is a brand new business. They're called The Training Room in American Fork, and James is with us. You know, last time we introduced people to what The Training Room was all about, let's talk about sports medicine. I know you want to focus on that a little bit. Tell us about what sports medicine is and how it relates to what you do at The Training Room.
Sure. And for me, that's specifically what I do. Mm-hmm. So I've been doing sports medicine for about 15 years, and I started at BYU. Eventually left BYU, went to work for Boeing in the private sector, but in environments like that, you have people who are experiencing injuries. Sometimes they're athletic injuries. At Boeing, it was workplace-type injuries. And we were providing support so that they wouldn't have to miss time. And so at The Training Room, we basically took those same principles and we said, we're going to plug and play this right here. And so all these gym members are going to have access to the same sports medicine. So orthopedic examinations, rehabilitative exercise, manual therapies to help them overcome injuries, and we even do post-surgical rehab. So we do a lot of different things, but it's all about keeping people healthy and moving forward.
What are some of the most common injuries that you try and help people with? Are it knees, shoulders, hips? What is it?
Yeah, so knees, shoulders, low back are probably the three big ones, but we treat everything all the way from feet, knees, hips, low backs, upper backs, necks, really everything. We've got people right now who are recovering from total knee replacements. We'll work with people who are trying to avoid having something like a knee or hip replacement. A lot of people have kind of ongoing back pain or shoulder pain or knee pain. That's why I say those are probably the three most common.
You talk about the experience, the fact that if you go to The Training Room, the experience is different from other gyms. Explain that.
Yeah, well, so like we talked about before, it's very personalized, but it's also more focused on what are you trying to do, right? We don't want to just collect your money and send you on your way. We want you to actually come in and be successful. So whether that's on the sports medicine side, helping you overcome injuries, or because you need help, you know, maybe you need nutritional support. Mm-hmm. You don't know what to do to change your nutrition. Maybe you don't know how to work out. We've got modalities to fit every need so that we can help you figure out how can I go from point A to point B, whatever that be.
You've got a special offer for people today who are listening right now. What is the offer, James?
So, again, if you mention KNRS, then you get your first week for free. Or if you're at another gym and you're thinking about leaving that other gym, we'll pay your cancellation fee.
All right, check it out today. Here's the number to call if you'd like to find out more information.
Study Incorporated, 6802 Paragon Place, Suite 500, Richmond, Virginia, 23230.
Rod Arquette Show here on Utah's Talk Radio, 105.9 KNRS. Listen, and you'll know coming up in the next hour after we get your news update, we'll talk about what the Utah State School Board did today as far as critical race theory in the classroom is concerned. We'll talk about efforts to ban certain words on that. We'll also talk about this eviction notice. Joe Biden is thumbing his nose at the U.S. Constitution. You're surprised at all? I'm not, to be real honest. We'll get a reaction to you, especially from you landlords out there. How you doing without all this money that generally comes in from renters? They aren't paying it now because of COVID-19, and the president said, you know, that's just fine. That's okay. Even though that rule violates the U.S. Constitution, the president doesn't mind breaking the law because his heart is in the right place. It's all coming up. Hour number two of the Radar Ken Show. Stay with us.
Show Saturday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on News Talk 570 AM, 105.9 FM, KNRS.
All right, welcome back to the Radar Ken Show with you on this Thursday. Can you believe we're almost to the end of the week already? Another week has just zoomed by. Great to be with you. We are, of course, live and local with you each and every day. Talk about the issues that are important to you, and we invite you to give us a call this hour, 888-570-8010, 888-570-8010, or on your cell phone, dial pound 250 and say, hey, run. I want to give you an update on critical race theory here in the state of Utah and what's going on. The Board of Education met today to put the finishing touches on its rules for teaching about racism in the classroom. And the board voted today, apparently on a vote of 13 to 1, and I can guess who the one abstention or the one who voted against it was. But the board has decided now to move forward without any amendments in implementing the rules that had developed for what educators can and can't say about racism in the classroom. Now, according to this article in the Salt Lake Tribune, the vote to formalize the new standards came today on a vote of 13 to 1, and the rules now set to take effect in just a few days on August 9th, shortly before the school year begins. Board member Molly Hart said, quote, "We need to move forward. The rules are not perfect. No document written by committee ever is. But overall, she says it is well balanced. The new policy largely follows a directive from the state conservative-leaning legislature," the words of the Tribune, "which ordered the state board to ban any lessons on harmful critical race theory in K-12 public schools, even though there's no indication that critical race theory has been taught in Utah classrooms." You want to put a BS on that one, right? Now, under the rules, teachers explicitly cannot say that one race is inherently superior or inferior, or that someone's moral character is influenced by race. That's what critical race theory is all about. They also cannot instruct that students bear responsibility for their past actions of any individuals of their race, such as blaming white people today for slavery. So my question would be, to you, mom and dad, knowing what the debate we've had in this state now on critical race theory, are you confident that CRT or tenets of CRT are going to be caught in the classroom this year? I guarantee you it's going to be. It is going to happen, folks. There are teachers out there who are trying to provide students with a, shall we say, a fuller education and present and come up with some of these things that critical race theory is being talked about. And I tell you why. Students have heard this. Our students aren't stupid. I don't think they are. I don't think you are either. But I don't think we think our kids don't listen to much about what's going on. But you know, in some classrooms, this is going to come up in an explanation. These teachers are going to be asked about critical race theory, what it's all about, and what it teaches. And how a teacher is going to respond to that is going to be very interesting to see. Now, there are going to be some teachers in this state who, when that question is asked, see it as the door opening for them to have a more robust discussion of critical race theory and what it's all about, and the debate over critical race theory, and maybe even their views about critical race theory. Because you know, a student, probably on the first day of school, may say, teacher, yes, Johnny, you raised your hand, what would you like? Can you talk to us about critical race theory and what it is and why there's such a discussion on it and what you know about it? Please enlighten us in that regard. And teachers are going to have to decide and try to figure out how to handle a question like that. Because it's going to come up. I mean, we aren't stupid, folks. We know it's going to come up in the classroom. And we can't control what teachers do and say, even though a policy is going to try. It's going to try and limit what teachers can and cannot say. Some teachers are going to say, yeah, let's sit down and talk about this. That is the opening that some teachers are looking for. And they're going to talk about it. That's why you, mom and dad out there, have got to be very on top of this year. And if something happens, you need to, first of all, find out from your student what exactly was said. Find out from that, then be able to go to the teacher and ask them that. And you have a right to do that. Remember, mom and dad, those teacher salaries are being paid by you. Okay? And if you don't get an answer that satisfies your questions, you have a right to go to the school principal. And if that doesn't work, you have a right to go to the school district. That's how parents need to be involved this year. They need to be involved because it is going to come up. There's nothing you can do about it. It's just going to come up. It happens. Let's be honest. It is going to come up, and you need to be prepared as to how you're going to respond to it. Now, so I want to get your reaction to that as we head into the school year, and it starts here very shortly. Kids may or may not be wearing masks. We don't know what Angela Dunn and her all-powerful position now as head of the Salt Lake County Health Department is going to do with masks in schools, at least in Salt Lake County. Not sure what other counties are going to do. But you darn well know this is going to come up, folks. And you're kidding yourself if you don't think it is. That's why you, mom and dad, need to be very vigilant about this. So I want to get your reaction to this. Are you confident as a parent today, knowing your kids are headed back to school here in a few weeks, that they will not hear anything or any little angle, whatever it is, on critical race theory in the classroom? Because I don't think you should be. I don't think you should be. Now, the other thing I wanted to talk to you about. How do you talk to your children? And how do you view what's going on in this country today? The rule of law. Joe Biden, and we talked about this in the last hour, is sticking his nose. He's giving the Constitution the finger over this eviction moratorium. Now, Congress, in its original bill to help people out during the height of the pandemic, passed a rule that basically said, you know, you cannot kick anybody out of their home or their apartment if they're renting it from you because of the pandemic. That rule ends soon. It has ended, I believe, already. And Congress did not act to reestablish it. They walked away from it. But there were some radical Democrats in Congress who went to Joe Biden and said, Joe, oh, you can't let this happen. You know, Joe, you got to have a heart. You cannot let this happen, Joe. And he didn't. He announced on Tuesday where he directed the CDC to extend the moratorium, even though a court has found it unconstitutional. And what did Joe Biden say? Well, we're going to keep it going. We know the appellate process will take a few months to figure out. And during that time, we can continue to provide relief to those people who need it. I don't care what the law says, but I'm going to break the law. That's what Joe Biden said in allowing this moratorium to continue. For you property owners out there, what you have is an example now of the federal government coming in and telling you what to do with your property. Despite the fact the courts have said it's unconstitutional, Joe Biden and his team, they don't care. Your reaction to that as well. 888-570-8010, 888-570-8010 on your cell phone, dial #250, and say, hey, Rod, your calls, your comments, coming up next right here on the Rod Arquette Show. Taking center stage today on the Rod Arquette Show has been the training room, and Brian is back with us. Brian, before we talk about, you know, your efforts to keep the training room open during COVID, what is the training room? What makes it different in your opinion, Brian?
So the training room is different because of how we approach fitness. We don't just look at it as a cookie cutter approach. We try to individualize everything for our members. So we provide sports medicine. I know James has been talking about today. And then we provide really tailored personal training for those individuals who want one-on-one training or group training or classes. And we really try to look at things from an individual standpoint.
Now, Brian, right now we're still struggling with COVID and trying to deal with this. You stayed open during the height of the COVID scare, and you're still open now. What do you do to make sure that people are safe?
Well, we did. We stayed open through COVID. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, it was a trying time for us. But because of our business model, it allows us to do things other gyms can't do. One quick example, we have a membership cap.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have a membership cap, if we reach that cap, we still know that we're going to have a certain amount of square footage for each member. Other gyms can't say that. And so by doing that and through our cleanliness processes and just being willing to be brave and stand up during COVID and say, hey, look, it's important that people stay fit. I mean, people talk about comorbidities when it comes down to COVID. Man, you let yourself go, you're just making yourself more vulnerable for COVID. And so for a lot of individuals, the gym is going to be the centerpiece for them to be able to stay on top of their fitness. And if it's going to be that, then we want to provide the opportunity that fits those individuals and provides the safest environment possible so that they don't have to worry about COVID when they walk through the doors.
If I'm hearing this for the first time, Brian, and I walk into the training room for the first time, what am I going to see? How am I going to see the difference?
The first thing that you're going to see is it's not going to be jam-packed.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see space, and you're going to see equipment that's well-maintained, that's brand new. You're going to see a staff that's glad to have you walk through the gym. They're going to, you know, learn your name very quickly if they don't already know it, and they're going to be there for you. You're going to have that support system in place so that you can be insured that when you come in there to work out, whether it's to get work on you through the sports medicine or to come in and do your own workout to work with your trainer, you're going to have the best possible situation that you could have.
If you want to find out more, check it out today. It's called The Training Room in American Fork. Go to ttrfit.com. That's ttrfit.com. Or give them a call right now, 385-254-5631.
New each time you listen. Listen and subscribe for free to Newt's World on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to the Rod Arquette Show. Before we get to your calls, talking about critical race theory and also this eviction moratorium, we had Mitt Romney on the show a week ago, and when the bipartisan deal on infrastructure came together, and remember Mitt Romney telling all of us that it was paid for. You know, we'd use existing COVID money that hasn't been spent as of yet and other revenue streams. You know, so it was all paid for. The Congressional Budget Office today said the bill would actually add $256 billion to the deficit. But about 17 Democrats are going to go along with it. Isn't it amazing? All right, let's get to your calls. We're talking about critical race theory in the classroom. I know the State Board of Education today moved forward with rules for teaching racism in the classroom, but I think you're still going to have to deal with critical race theory. And we can talk about this eviction moratorium. Joe Biden says, I don't care what the courts say. I don't care what the Constitution says. I'm going to continue with it anyway. So if you're a landlord out there, how you feel about losing that money? And the president doesn't give a you-know-what about you. 888-570-8010, or on your cell phone, dial #250 and say, hey, Rod, to the phones we go, and let's begin in Harriman with Jesse. Jesse, welcome to the Rod Arquette Show.
Hi, Rod. Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you. Go ahead, Jesse.
Awesome. So I am an educator here in the Salt Lake Valley, mm-hmm. and all educators, first through third year, were required to take a jump start to training for teaching, just to get us ahead of, you know, the track
mm-hmm,
to be good teachers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they took an entire section, and this is all presented by the Utah State Board of Education. And they put on this video that starts with Hillary Clinton, and it shows one after another all of these extreme far-left-wing actors and professional politicians. And it just talked about critical race theory and equity and equality. And it was just kind of shoved down our throats. Like, we just had to accept it. And they let us know that there are people on the board they're going around the state, and they, their job is specifically to train us, to teach us in the schools. And this was just, you know, 3 weeks ago.
So when you say they pushed it on you, what were they telling you? Were they telling you specifically things to say, how to approach a certain topic? Exactly what were they doing, Jesse?
Right. So this was a very brief overview, but it was kind of a layout of, we're going to come and we're going to train you on teaching equity to your students to make sure that they are all feeling like they have an equitable share, that they are, it talked about, you know, being Black versus white and being not accepted for who you are versus it's the color of your skin. And they very, very clearly said that that was part of the training that they're going to be taking around to all of the state-run schools.
So is the State Board of Education lying to Utahns when they say critical race theory is not being taught in the classroom? Do you think they're misleading the public?
I would say so.
Really?
Yeah, I would say definitely after the training that, you know, and it was just, you know, a good hour training within the 3-day period of time with a brief overview. But absolutely, that is their plan. That is what they told us for all of us new teachers. Yep.
All right, Jesse. Well, hang in there, man. Keep teaching if you can. Al in Salt Lake City. Al, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir. Hey, on the critical race theory, I believe what parents and actually the school board should be doing is telling all of the teachers that if a child asks about it, they should say no comment or we're not allowed to talk about that and move on. They should have nothing to say whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you can actually maybe, you know, ask for volunteers that maybe, you know, some of the older people that aren't working that just want to get out, they can sit in the classroom just as a volunteer to make sure it goes the way that it's supposed to go. And as far as Biden breaking the rules, again, if we break the law, we're going to be arrested. So I don't think Biden should be out there breaking the laws either.
Well, he is. He is, unfortunately, Ellen. You're absolutely right. You know, we had talked one time, and my wife and I have a son who's a teacher, got into quite a discussion about cameras in the classroom so that parents, anytime they want, can monitor what's going on in a classroom. And my wife said no, she didn't like the idea. My son, who's a teacher, didn't like the idea. But I wonder how teachers would respond if volunteers started showing up at various schools and saying, I'd like to sit on this class and see what's being discussed. How teachers would respond to it. And if you as a parent would even be willing to do something like that. Interesting. Let's go to Lee in Provo tonight here on the Rod Arquette Show. Lee, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, I'm glad that we, at least as a school board, are wrestling with this, whether we can control whether teachers themselves do it or not. But I have noticed an interesting trend when I see these debates happening elsewhere and a little bit in Salt Lake. You hear parents say, school board, you're school's jobs are to give my kids a foundation in reading and writing and math and science and literature and all these things.
Mm-hmm.
The rebuttal that you always get on the other side is critical race theory isn't a big deal. We're not going to worry about it, but people need to learn history. And they leave it at history. And the problem with that is once you introduce critical race theory officially into the curriculum, suddenly you can't teach math because math is racist. You can't teach literature because literature is racist. You can't teach all these different subjects because they're systemically racist. And the only thing you can teach is revisionist history because there isn't revisionist math. There isn't revisionist science. There isn't. Hard sciences aren't revisionist. And so you've got to jettison them and only teach revisionist history if you let critical race theory in your school district.
Yeah. Kind of frightening, isn't it, Lee? I mean, it's really kind of scary.
It is a bit.
Yeah, it is. All right, Lee, thank you. Appreciate your comment. You're right, Lee mentioned, they bring CRT into math, into science, into literature. You know, this is just an example. Cradle the grave. That's what the Democrats want in this country. They want you to depend on them for everything, including the education that they want you to learn. They want you to understand. It all started, by the way, with Barack Obama. Well, actually, before that, but Obama kind of got it really started, in my opinion. All right, more of your calls coming up here on the Rod Arquette Show, 888-570-8010.
Something new each time you listen. Listen and subscribe for free to Newt's World on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
One man, one goal. Yeah, one vision.
The Rod. Rod Arquette Show on Talk Radio 105.9 KNRS.
All right, welcome back to the Rod Arquette Show. You know, it's got to be, you parents, you know, my kids are old. They have their own children now, right? So we don't have to worry about many of the decisions that you have to make. But, you know, look at this. Are you going to send your child to school this year if they're being forced by people like Angela Dunn to wear a mask? Okay. Are you going to send your kids to school this year, even though the State Board of Education has a new policy saying you can't talk about critical race theory in the classroom or racism? We've set up some, you know, guardrails on it to protect your kids from being taught critical race theory. But how confident are you that that's not going to be brought up and going to be taught? I mean, it is tough for moms and dads to make decisions and going into the school year. I mean, why can't we just send our kids to school so they can learn the basics, learn to make some friends, actually see their friends' faces, and do the things that school is all about without having to worry about these other things? But that's the state of the world today. Now, if you didn't hear this, I want to play this back. We played this a little while ago. This in exchange that took place in Westchester County, Pennsylvania, the school board meeting there. They were holding a meeting, taking comments about critical race theory in that school district. A woman from Iran, an immigrant to the country.
Thanks, Rod. Salt Lake City begins.
Who has two sons that she is raising and has in the school system, wanted to address the board about her concerns about critical race theory. And wait till you see what happens.
I don't even care what CRT stands for, but dividing families, teachers, and I'm sure your staff members, under something that nobody's clear what it is about, it's unfair. I resent being here and having to post on my Facebook and my text my friends, my very good friend Aaron, who started up and spoke, and say, what is CRT? Why do I have to worry about it? I send my kids to study mathematics, literature, history, and I want them to study every kind of history because that's how I am. My house, actually, as a matter of fact, is known as the International House of Pancakes. You know why? Because my kids' best friends are Black, Brazilian, Mexican, Muslim, Australian, English, white, purple, black. What are we doing to each other? And sir, you did a great job for 12 years, but you're leaving a mess. You have brought division to us. This is not the way it's supposed to be. Since when my twin, 13 years old, are supposed to save the world? They're supposed to be going to college.
Anita, you're a time.
No.
Yes, you are.
Because for 12 years you made a mess, and you didn't even have the guts to tell me that you were the chair of the board. And you stood there, you said it. I want to know, are you teaching CRT to our teachers? And if not, what did you say?
Now, at that moment, the superintendent, the president of the school board, I should say, his name is Chris Kuhn, got up from his chair at the school board meeting, walked around, came down to where this woman was speaking at the podium, and grabbed the microphone away from her, completely took it off the desk because, quote, well, she wasn't scheduled to speak. That would be his argument. And she went too long. And now there are people in that school district who are calling for his resignation. I mean, this is how emotional critical race theory is in the school system today. Now, the Utah legislature listened to what people were saying, and they directed the State Board of Education to come up with a set of rules for teaching about racism in the classroom this year. The board voted 13-1 today to move forward with those rules. They didn't add an amendment that Natalie Klein wanted to add to it about words she didn't want shared in the classroom, but they moved forward with it. So my question to you is tonight, now, the teachers will get this on August 9th, just a couple of days from now, to start, you know, reading it over, learning what they can and cannot say about CRT in the classroom. But, come on, let's be real, folks. It's going to come up, and it's going to be taught. and you heard a call earlier. She's a teacher. She went through some training, and they were required to sit down and listen for 1 hour to what CTR is all about. Do you honestly believe that the state school board is doing all it can to keep critical race theory out of the classroom? 888-570-8010, 888-570-8010, or on your cell phone, dial #250 and say, "Hey, Rod." More of your calls and comments coming up on the Rod Arquette Show. The training room in American Fork is taking center stage today on the Rod Arquette Show. We've talked about sports medicine. We've talked about the difference with the training room and what it is. Now Mike is joining us to talk about the customized personal training that you offer. Why do people want personalized training? What do you do for them, Mike?
So when we talk about personalized, since we all know that everybody is different with unique abilities, what fit one person will not necessarily fit another person. So based on your goals, we sit you down and we take you through a step-by-step approach, starting with questions and your lifestyle pattern, where you came from, what you're doing right now, and where you want to be. And based on those information, we are able to determine what will fit your needs in order for you to get to the goal you want to get to. And the approach is not just getting the results. At the training room, we focus on getting the results or getting it healthy, helping you to remain healthier. So not just getting the results and leaving you hanging, but we coach you on how to maintain your goals, your results.
Yeah, and everybody has a different goal, so it's customized right to that person. Like myself, I don't want to be Mr. Muscles. I just want to feel better, maybe lose a little bit of weight. You customize a plan just for that, right, Mike?
Yes, we customize a plan just for you. I don't know where you've been. I don't know your lifestyle. I don't know your family history, your background. I have no idea. So in order for me to be able to determine where you want to go, I need to know where you came from. And that's when the customization come in. Building that relationship with our clients, it means so much to them. For them to know and understand that you care about them, you really side by side with them. And that's the purpose of a personal trainer. A personal trainer is somebody you can confide in, somebody you can trust.
If you want to find out more, they've got a great offer, by the way, today. That's why you need to call them right now. It's the training room in American Fork. Give them a call. Make sure you mention KNRS because they've got a great offer for you today. The number to call is 385-254-5631.
That's 01-443-7400. You can Google Any Hour Services. You can even schedule online at anyhourservices.com.
The Rod Arquette Show here on Utah's Talk Radio, 105.9 KNRS. Listen, and you'll know. Well, the Congressional Budget Office today, and this is what a lot of lawmakers look to when they come to expenses and how much the federal government is spending, took a look at this $1.2 trillion infrastructure deal that Republicans like Mitt Romney and others hammered out with the Democrats and could be voted on maybe tomorrow, most likely sometime next week. Now, remember, Mitt Romney and others said, hey, this is not going to cost a penny because we're going to use unused COVID funds. There'll be new revenue streams coming into the federal government, and we are going to be able to pay for this infrastructure deal. About half of it, maybe less than half of it actually, goes toward roads and bridges. A lot of it is going toward the Green New Deal as Joe Biden tries to change this country, to transform this country into doing what he wants when it comes to climate change. Well, the CBO came out today and said if this bill is passed, it will add $526 billion to the deficit. Not going to cost us anything? Are they going to pay for it? Well, they aren't. And that's what you need to understand about that. Steve Moore, by the way, will be joining us coming up after our news update at the top of the hour to analyze that and other economic news that is going on a little bit later on. We'll also talk with Sim Gill and Representative Paul Ray about new rules in place now passed by the legislature this past year dealing with the prosecution of police officers charged in police shootings. That's coming up as well here on the Rod Arquette Show. You know, as we talk about critical race theory in the classroom and education in general, I sometimes wonder why we as parents don't have more of a say into what we want our children taught in school. Now, maybe that's impossible to do. I'm not sure. I throw that out there Because do you feel, as a parent, that your children are being taught what you think they need to know to be independent, to be able to think for themselves, be able to be responsible, and to understand accountability, and to understand failure? Now, those are things that aren't taught in reading, writing, and arithmetic. Much of that is left to mom and dad at home. But do you feel as a parent sometime that you have say in what your child is being taught in school? The State Board of Education today voted to move forward with the rules for teaching about racism in the classroom because so many people out there, and rightfully so, are concerned about the influence that critical race theory can have in the classroom. It is a direct threat to a number of areas in this country, including the family, and including our relationship with each other. You know, do we want our children, and this is the concerns that people who are opposed to CRT have, the concern is that it will pit students against each other, that a white student will need to feel that they are the oppressor. And ever since this country was founded, that we've been oppressing black people. And black people will feel they're oppressed. How is that going to unite the country? Now, I know the educators say that if you have a greater understanding, a richer understanding of history in America, that we will become a better nation. I think we're a pretty good nation now. No one recognizes the steps we have made in race relations over the years. Now, I think we've taken a couple of steps back because of the people in the White House, one, of course, being Barack Obama, the other one being Joe Biden. You know, but I really think that we've gotten better. I mean, nobody will say we're ever perfect. We are working toward a more perfect union. And I think that's the concern that a lot of you have out there when it comes to what is being taught in the classroom nowadays. Now, we leave it up to educators. We trust them, the teachers that many of you know and get to know, and they're good, good teachers out there, really good teachers out there. But how much say do you actually have in what your child is being taught? You know, because this is where you as a parent, don't leave it up to that teacher to decide. You know, hopefully, now, you know, how many of you go to parent-teacher conferences? Not many. I know that for a fact. Not many. We did when we had kids in school because we felt we wanted to know how our kids were doing. That is one thing that you can do. And I encourage you this school year that when those dates come up and you have an opportunity to talk to your child's teacher about what your child is doing in school and what is being taught, take advantage of that. I think it's more important now than it ever has been. All right, hour number three results. Come take a tour. Learn more about a Challenger School education for your child. Details at challengerschool.com. We're live, we're local, and we're everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. How are you, everybody? Welcome back. Hour number three of the Rod Arquette Show with you on this Thursday as we get ready to take you into a Friday with Thank Rod It's Friday coming up tomorrow, of course. Great to be with you. Another jam-packed hour. Steve Moore will join us here in a few minutes. There's a debate in Utah right now going on among some people about this idea. It makes it harder for prosecutors to charge police officers who are involved in a police officer-involved shooting. The DEA in Salt Lake County, Sim Gill, says the legislature has created too many hurdles. A state lawmaker says that's not the case. We'll talk about that coming up this hour as well, and we'll get you an update as well about how things are going in southern Utah right now with tourism. They've had an unbelievable year, but things are starting to slow down, and we'll find out why coming up a little bit later on in the show. Well, there is some bad late-breaking news for Mitt Romney and other Republicans who helped put together this $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill. Despite claims, repeated claims, I should say, by supporters that the bipartisan package would be fully paid for, the Congressional Budget Office today said the bill would actually add $256 billion, that's with a B, dollars to the deficit. The official scorekeeper of Congress wrote over the 2021-2031 period, enacting Senate Amendment 2137 to H.R. 3684 would decrease direct payment by $110 billion. On net, the legislation would add $256 billion to projected deficits over that period of time. Well, joining us on our Newsmaker line to talk about all of this right now is Steve Moore, chief economist at the Heritage Foundation, a regular guest on the show. Steve, explain this to me, Steve. Here you have a group of Republicans who are saying, let's pass this infrastructure bill, even though it may not be perfect. We better pass this one, or the Democrats are going to pass one that's even worse. I mean, explain the logic behind that, would you, Steve?
I think it was a mistake. I think Republicans need to stay, you know, at least 100 or 200 or 300 yards away from this economic fiscal mess that's going on in Washington. You know, we already spent $1.9 trillion at the beginning of the year on these kinds of programs. Now we're set to spend another $1 trillion. And then, of course, there will be a $3.5 trillion bill coming behind this. So that's just, you know, fiscally unconscionable. I think it risks a real financial crisis if all of these debt bills are to pass. And some Republicans just want to, you know, be on the side to say that we got something done. But, you know, it matters a lot what you get done. And this is mostly green energy policies. It's policies for, you know, transit projects that nobody uses. It's free electric charging stations for, you know, people who own Teslas. But it's not going to help the economy. And I think that the cost is excessive at a time when we already have a $30 trillion debt.
Steve, are they just doing this, the Republicans, just to show, hey, we can work together, bipartisanship? Man, look what we have done. Is that what behind this, Steve?
Well, you know, there's also a lot of work in this bill.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans love to spend money. Let's not forget that. I mean, they are big spenders. They, just like the Democrats are, they don't normally spend quite as much as the Democrats do. But when it comes to bringing home the bacon, you know, Republicans like that as much as Democrats do.
Steve, what about the Wall Street Journal today called this the Green New Deal Part 1? There's a lot of climate change money in all of this, isn't there?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've read through the bill. Every other page is about, you know, this is going to achieve this climate change objective and that climate change objective. You know, it's so ironic, isn't it, that, you know, this president who says he's for infrastructure, the first thing he did when he became president was cancel a major infrastructure project that didn't cost the taxpayers a penny. I'm talking, of course, about the Keystone XL pipeline. Incidentally, along these lines, the president announced earlier today that he is now setting a goal that 50% of the new cars sold in the United States 10 years from now will be electric vehicles. I mean, the only way I see that happening is if the government's going to buy the electric vehicles from people because they're expensive. And a lot of Americans, you know, look, I believe in choice. I don't have anything against electric vehicles. I've driven Teslas. They're beautiful cars. But, you know, Americans still have a love affair with the old combustible engine. So I'm really worried that they're going to use more and more coercive kinds of techniques to force people to buy the kind of cars that the government wants you to buy.
And wasn't there a story out of California, I think I saw this last week, Steve, that 1 in 5 electric vehicle owners turned them back in?
Yeah.
Because they like gas guzzlers. They don't want these electric vehicles. And the number one reason, it just takes too long to charge them.
Yeah, and then if you can't travel as far, and so people get stranded with their electric vehicle when the battery runs out. So that is a problem. And so the big issue is, you know, what's going to happen with this bill? And I think it probably will pass. I think that, unfortunately, I think the Democrats will probably get the 10 Republicans they need to pass this bill. But then, you know, then comes the big massive spending bill, which they're calling infrastructure, which is a massive welfare increase. And that is going to be, you know, the battle of all ages because it has every left-wing idea and all the spending programs and all of the changes in policy they want. You know, you're there in Utah,
mm-hmm.
and Utah is a right-to-work state. Well, this bill would repeal the state's right to work law and force workers to join a union whether they want to or not.
Steve, we always talk about the economy. Yesterday, ATP came out with its report on jobs created, about half of what is being expected. What's going on with the job market, Steve?
It's still good. I mean, obviously, there's 9 million job openings. By the way, that's the other thing that happened this week, is that this eviction notification has been so controversial, because there are a lot of legal scholars who are saying he didn't have the constitutional right to just unilaterally extend this moratorium. The Supreme Court, it's a defiance of the Supreme Court. So that's going to be an interesting one to keep an eye on. But I think that we're in a situation now where the Democrats think they have all the power and they can do what they want. They can shove it down the Republicans' throat if they have to, because they have, 50, they have mm-hmm. one mm-hmm. seat majority in the Senate and a 5-seat majority in the 435 seat House. But I don't think the American people are very much in favor of this massive giveaway spending. And so I think it's going to be a real battle in the months ahead.
Steve, I saw your weekly column this week talking about America's tech sector and the fact that we're really blowing away the rest of the world. How advanced and how far ahead of the rest of the world are we, Steve?
Well, I mean, you want some good news on the economy. Look at the stock market. Look at, the NASDAQ, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, and the S&P 500 are at all-time highs right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the NASDAQ in the last, 10 or 12 years has tripled. So, we have 10 companies in America that are worth more than all of the publicly traded companies in China. So we are leading. There's no question about it. We're technologically so superior to Europe and Japan and China, and it's something the Americans should be proud of. I don't know. I'm not always proud of the politics of companies like Google and Apple,
mm-hmm.
but boy, did they, produce products that people want. And I hate to see our politicians try to tear them down. People on the right are trying to tear them down because they don't like their politics. People on the left are trying to tear them down because they don't want companies to be too big and too successful. And one of the point of my commentary was, it's a sad day in America when, being an economic success and making profits is a bad thing. I mean, think of all the people who've been made into millionaires, and just, people next door by owning Apple stock or Google stock or Netflix stock or Microsoft stock. So, I'm proud of the fact that we lead the world in these technologies, and I don't want to surrender that technological leadership.
Yeah, when we lived in Seattle, they call them Microsoft millionaires. These are people who got in early buying the stock in Microsoft, and now they're now all millionaires, Steve. Final question, Steve. We ask you every week about the economy. Where does it stand? What do you think right now?
It's good. We're going to get that jobs report tomorrow. I think it'll be decent. It won't be great, but it'll be good. And I think the economy is healthy. I'm very worried about new rounds of lockdowns across the country because of the Delta variant.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be a big mistake. I'm worried about stay-at-home orders and other things that could really cripple our small businesses. And then I think, now is not a great time to be raising taxes. But don't forget, Biden's plan includes the biggest tax increase on American businesses in U.S. history. So there are a lot of black clouds out there. But for now, if you want a job, they're out there.
On our Newsmaker line, Steve Moore, chief economist at the Heritage Foundation and Freedom Works. He also has been a former economic advisor to President Trump, joining us on our Newsmaker line right now. All right, more coming up on the Rod Arkent Show in Utah's Talk Radio, 105.9 KNRS. We're an iHeartRadio station. Brand new company we want to introduce you today on center stage here on the Rod Arkent Show. We're talking about The Training Room. They're based in American Fork, and James is joining us right now to tell us all about it. All right, The Training Room. There are thousands of gyms out there, as you well know, James. What is The Training Room, and what difference does it offer people?
So The Training Room is something that we started about 3 years ago because we wanted to have a better gym experience. So my business partners come from the fitness industry, working in larger gyms,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of them are too crowded. They have broken equipment. They're dirty. They're just not pleasant to be in. So we wanted to create a different experience that was more comfortable for people, something that they would actually like to be at every day, that treated them like they actually belong there.
How would you describe the experience as being different? What makes a difference in your opinion, James?
Well, so one of the things people comment on is when you walk in the door, the front desk staff know your name.
Mm-hmm.
You're not just one of 10,000 members. They'll
mm-hmm.
be like, oh, hey, Rod, it's good to see you today.
Mm-hmm.
And they might even chat with you because you just went on vacation. And it's in that regard, it's much more personalized. And then inside, you have a lot more space to use, about five times as much space as any other gym per person. It's just comfortable. It's clean. Like I said, all the equipment's brand new and great shape. It's just a fun place to be.
Yeah. Now, oftentimes when people go to a gym, they're reluctant to do so because they're embarrassed. They don't know exactly what to do. They see these really healthy people over here, and they aren't that healthy. Do you try and make them more comfortable in that regard?
Absolutely. So we really want everyone, every fitness level, to feel comfortable there. And so even our members will reach out to each other. You could go up and ask anybody, say, hey, what are you doing today? And they'll talk to you. They'll socialize with you. They'll help you figure out what you're doing. If you don't know what you're doing, whether it's a staff member or even another gym member, they'll make you feel comfortable.
All right. Now, I know today you've got a special offer for people. What is that offer right now, James?
So, for one, you can try your first week for free when you mention KNRS. Or if you come in and you're already a member of another gym, we'll actually pay your cancellation fee if you want to leave that gym.
All right. If you want to check it out, it's the training room in American Fork. You can go online, ttr.com, ttrfit.com, to get all the information, or give them a call, 385-254-5631. That's 385-254-5631.
Loan approved. Low book sales. Low book sales. Lowbooksales.com.
All right, welcome back. The Rod Arquette Show on Utah's Talk Radio, 105.9 KNRS. Listen, and you'll know. You know, there has been a lot of talk about police reform, police-involved shootings, not only in the state of Utah, but around the country since the killing of George Floyd on Memorial Day of last year. There is a Utah prosecutor now who claims that the new self-defense law that was approved by lawmakers actually makes it harder now to charge officers who were involved in a shooting, raising serious questions about it. And joining us on our newsmaker line to talk about that right now is Sim Gill. Sim, of course, is Salt Lake County and City District Attorney. Sim, thanks for joining us. Sim, you're concerned about this. You call it a new hurdle. Exactly what is this new hurdle that prosecutors are now having to face?
Yeah, you know, it's just an observational fact. House Bill 227 created a new hearing in the use of defense, and that's not only going to be available to law enforcement; it's going to be available to those who are do gang violence or engage in homicides or engage in violent behavior. And what it really does is that anybody who wants to make a claim of self-defense, there is a new additional hearing, which requires prosecution after a preliminary hearing before a jury trial to yet again go through another hurdle of by clear and convincing evidence to say that the self-defense does not apply. So in the context of officer-involved shootings, more often than not, that's a claim that's there. That's just one more additional hurdle that's put in there. And I simply made a remark to an observation fact of a reality that got passed, and that's where we are.
Was it designed, that law that was passed, from what I understand, Sim, it was designed for people who were trying to protect themselves, not specifically for officers. Do you think it was designed to protect officers as well?
Well, of course, because in the body of the language, it says the individual against whom force was used or threatened as a law enforcement officer it does not apply. So it specifically mentions that as an issue. And if you want to claim self-defense against a police officer as a citizen, you're not entitled to do that. So it specifically excludes you from that. So that's in the body of the language of the statute itself. But more importantly, the point that I was trying to make was, look, we're a participatory democracy. And if we want to change and have different outcomes, then we need to go change the law. And here's the terrain of how the law is laid out. We can have a differences of opinions, but as a participatory democracy, we're supposed to go through this process. If we want different outcomes, then let's change the law. And that's basic civics 101, but change is hard work. You have to build consensus. You have to engage in that process in this country that we're supposed to be engaged in. And that was really the point that I've been trying to make. It's not about simply
filing charges for the sake of filing charges or because you have the authority to do so. We have ethical obligations. We have evidentiary obligation. And my job is to enforce the law, even if I may disagree with it or anybody else may disagree with it. And that's our process.
How difficult is it, Sim, in your opinion, for prosecutors, according to the law, they must show clear and convincing evidence that the person wasn't acting in self-defense? Clear and convincing evidence. How difficult is that to prove?
Well, it is difficult to prove, and if you don't meet that burden, then it's mandatory that the case be dismissed with prejudice. And even if you meet your burden, that same issue is available as a defense. So my point simply was that defense is available. We don't want to take anybody's defense away. But at the same time, I don't want the collateral consequences of the fiscal impact for taxpayers to also be picked up for yet one, again, unnecessary hurdle for us to jump through when that defense is available at trial. And even if I meet my burden by clear and convincing evidence and the judge agrees with it, I can't make a reference to it because that defense is to be relitigated freshly in front of a jury again. So it's not fair to the taxpayers, and it's an unnecessary hurdle that was put in there by the legislature. And so without taking anybody's due process rights away, it wasn't necessary.
What would you recommend to change it? How should it be changed if lawmakers would ever go along with this?
Well, look, I think that the self-defense claim is available. It is, as a matter of right, available to anybody who you criminally charge. Raise it at the time of trial, we didn't have this law before, and nobody's rights were being denied, and it was unnecessary for us to put in there. Look, one of my concerns is, this came in the context of whether to charge or not charge, and I was trying to address that issue of how difficult it is when it comes to law enforcement. Don't get me wrong. There are many men and women in law enforcement who do their job with honor and distinction, and they are trained to do, and they use that force appropriately. But this also has a collateral impact on violent crime, gang crime, and homicides. And surely we didn't need to do this and still give them the right for self-defense claim in a trial. It was unnecessary.
Sim, there's been, of course, a lot of debate about police reform and police shootings, police-involved shootings, not only in this state but around the country. Do you think that Utah lawmakers have not raised the bar high enough when it comes to when police can use force? Do you think the bar should be raised a little bit higher?
I think that, my goal is to just sort of say the truth as it is. First of all, in this country, my advocacy really is for the rights of all citizens. And nobody should be above the law, regardless of what your profession is. Now, in that context, if there's special circumstances, right now, if you look across the nation and in our state, there is a disproportionate favoring of law enforcement, and our community of citizens is rightfully wanting a different outcome. So I'm not saying that we should ever take away that the difficulty that they have, but we can surely come up with reasonable balancing of that. So, for example, right now, the use of force, affirmative defense, casts a really wide net. So it is not unreasonable to say that if you create the emergency, then you don't get to rely on the emergency as a justification. Maybe we shouldn't be shooting mentally ill people whose only self-harm is to themselves. And that's not to take away any of the protections for the hard work our law enforcement officers do, but it certainly is to equalize it with the community of citizens and the principles on what this country was founded on.
He's the district attorney for Salt Lake County, Sim Gill, joining us on our Newsmaker line, talking about this piece of new legislation that lawmakers passed earlier this year when it comes to police-involved shootings. He says they've created a new hurdle. Now, when we come back, the state lawmaker who put this all together.
An in-depth consultation, absolutely free. That's 801-441-2266.
Interstate, a dirt road to any place, long as I'm long gone, chasing down some blue skies in my old truck.
The
Marquette Show on Talk Radio 105.9 KNRS.
Before we took a break for an update with news, traffic, and weather, you heard our conversation with Sim Gill, Salt Lake County District Attorney, talking about the fact that he feels that under a law passed earlier this year, didn't address police directly, but Sim Gill says it has added a new hurdle for any prosecutor attempting to charge a police officer. Well, a Utah lawmaker who was involved in that legislation says the law for justifying police use of deadly force is fine as is. Joining us on our newsmaker line right now is State Representative Paul Ray. Paul, always great to have you back on the show. Paul, let me ask you this question. Do you feel that lawmakers raise the bar too high for prosecutors to deal with when it comes to charging a police officer in a shooting?
You know, Rod, I think where we are right now is a good area to be. And we did tighten some things up during the legislature, you know, just to make sure we did, you know, a lot more reporting requirements when it came to use of force, you know. But really, I think when it comes to the actual shootings, you know, Sim says the legislature didn't have the will to do it. We actually had the will to do what was right. And just because he doesn't agree with our actions, all of a sudden we're, you know, now, you know, there's no inaction according to him. But the fact is, you got to have a balance, a fair balance. And, you know, we're having a hard time recruiting law enforcement right now. So you keep allowing somebody like Sim to keep going after law enforcement. His complaint is they were justified. But by gosh, I really want to charge somebody, and if you'll change the law, I can charge these guys.
Let me ask you, he does indicate that it's making hard, you know, the law, either by not changing it or making some reforms, has actually made it harder for him to prosecute officers who may not have been justified. Do you feel you've made it harder for prosecutors in cases like this?
You know, we have not. The bill he was talking about went through the legislature pretty much unopposed, and nobody said a word about it. Then all of a sudden he turns around and starts saying that it made it harder for him to prosecute. And his job isn't to prosecute police officers. His job is to find out whether, based on the law, it was justified or unjustified. And then if it was unjustified, his job is to go out and prosecute. And if it's unjustified, I don't think we did anything that affected the ability to prosecute.
How about for police officers themselves? In the situation today, do you feel that the law right now is fair in treating them when they are involved in a police-involved shooting? Do you feel the law is currently fair?
You know, I think it is. You know, matter of fact, there's a lot of pressure on law enforcement, which is why it's hard to recruit. But I think where we are, obviously they've got certain requirements they have to follow. The problem we have, Rod, is the public. I mean, there's people out there that just feel like they don't have to obey law enforcement. And they've been taught that law enforcement is the enemy, which is not the case. And people just have to start following the law, and they have to start listening. You know, obey what an officer tells you. You may not agree with it, but do it. And then if you've got a problem later, take it to their supervisors.
Paul, thank you very much for saying that, because I've been saying that for a long, long time. If you look at these very high-profile police shootings that we've had around the country, if those who were involved in this would have done what the police officers had asked them to do, they'd be alive today. But society, I don't know what it is. Why don't people obey the law when an officer says do something?
You know, I think people are now have an attitude that they're above the law. They've been taught by a lot of these anti-law enforcement groups that, you know, to them, that law enforcement is the enemy, which is not true at all. And, you know, it's okay to disagree, but you have to do it in the right setting. You can't do it when an officer is trying to get you out of a vehicle because of a felony stop and you're fighting. That's going to cause a problem.
How do you change society's viewpoint, though, on that, Paul? What has to be done? Where does that change start, and how do we achieve what you're talking about in understanding that law enforcement isn't out to get you, but they're out to make sure you obey the law?
You know, Rod, I think we really start enforcing the laws. You know, right now it seems like some of these prosecutors, they like to give people a pass. They like to take the progressive side of, yeah, I don't agree with this law, therefore I'm not going to prosecute this law, or I would rather go after the law enforcement versus the perpetrators. So you start in the ballot box. You start electing people that are going to do their job, that are going to uphold, you know, public safety, and you know, they're going to, you know, not choose and pick which laws they enforce.
Final question for you, Paul. As member of the House Law Enforcement Committee, do you see much in the way of police reform coming lawmakers' way in January?
You know, Rod, we actually did a lot of police reform during the last session. You know, the Democrats didn't get what they wanted. Like, one of them brought a bill that basically said an officer involved in a shooting, the shooting was automatically not justified, and they had to prove that it was justified. And I'm sorry, but that's not police reform. You know, you can't start there. So we made some changes to some of those, and I think we put out a pretty good package, and I honestly think we're where we need to be.
On our Newsmaker Line, State Representative Paul Ray, here on Utah's Talk Radio, 105.9 KNRS. Listen, and you'll know. All right, an update on tourism in southern Utah. That's coming up next, right here on the Rod Arkent Show.
Taking Utah's center Talk stage Radio, today on the Rod Arkent Show is a brand new business.
Listen, they're called the Training Room, and American Fork, and James is with us. You know, last time we introduced people to what the Training Room was all about, let's talk about sports medicine. I know you want to focus on that a little bit. Tell us about what sports medicine is and how it relates to what you do at the Training Room.
Sure. And for me, that's specifically what I do. Mm-hmm. So I've been doing sports medicine for about 15 years, and I started at BYU, eventually left BYU, went to work for Boeing in the private sector. But in environments like that, you have people who are experiencing injuries. Sometimes they're athletic injuries. At Boeing, it was workplace-type mm-hmm. injuries. Mm-hmm. And we were providing support so that they wouldn't have to miss time. And so at the Training Room, we basically took those same principles and we said, we're going to plug and play this right here. And so all these gym members are going to have access to the same sports medicine. So orthopedic examinations, rehabilitative exercise, manual therapies to help them overcome injuries. And we even do post-surgical rehab. So we do a lot of different things, but it's all about keeping people healthy and moving forward.
What are some of the most common injuries that you try and help people with? Are it knees? Shoulders, yeah. Hips, what is it?
Yeah, so knees, shoulders, low back are probably mm-hmm. the three big ones, but mm-hmm. we treat everything all the way from feet, knees, hips, low backs, upper backs, necks, really everything. We've got people right now who are recovering from total knee replacements. We'll work with people who are trying to avoid having something like a knee or hip replacement. A lot of people have kind of ongoing back pain or shoulder pain or knee pain. That's why I say those are probably the three most common.
You talk about the experience, the fact that if you go to the Training Room, the experience is different from other gyms. Explain that.
Yeah, well, so like we talked about before, it's very personalized, but it's also more focused on what are you trying to do, right? We don't want to just collect your money and send you on your way. We want you to actually come in and be successful. So whether that's on the sports medicine side, helping you overcome injuries, or because you need help. You know, maybe you need nutritional support. Mm-hmm, you don't mm-hmm. know what to do to change your nutrition. Maybe you don't know how to work out. We've got modalities to fit every need so that we can help you figure out how can I go from point A to point B, whatever that be.
You've got a special offer for people today who are listening right now. What is the offer, James?
So, again, if you mention KNRS, then you get your first week for free, or if you're at another gym and you're thinking about leaving that other gym, we'll pay your cancellation fee.
All right, check it out today. Here's the number to call if you'd like to find out more information. The Training Room in American Fork, 385-25.
Think to high heaven, but credityes.com is like a breath of fresh air.
When you think credit, think yes. Think credityes.com.
Final segment of the Rod Arkent Show with you on this Thursday in Utah's Talk Radio, 105.9 KNRS. Listen, and you'll know. Of course, we've heard stories throughout the summer that Americans who've been cooped up for more than a year and a half because of COVID-19 are out and about, many of them going to our great national parks that we have. We have five of them here in the state of Utah, but around the country, tourism to the national parks is setting records all over the place. But is it causing problems, and is that trend continuing? Well, joining us on our Newsmaker line to talk about that from Ruby's Inn, right at the entrance of Bryce Canyon National Park, is Lance Syrett. Lance, thanks for joining us. Lance, give us an update. We've heard stories about record-setting number of tourists showing up at national parks, including Bryce Canyon this year. What's your take on what's going on in southern Utah right now, Lance?
Yeah, well, it's always a pleasure to speak with you, Rod. And, you know, down here in Bryce, man, we've been having some beautiful weather, and we've had a great season. And, you know, we had just a really busy spring when things opened up after COVID. It was busy in early summer, and you know, things are just really slowed down lately, and I think, you know, there's bad news in the world. When bad news happens, people tend to hunker down. But I can tell you, we've got some great deals right now, and it's a really You know, if you've been reading that news in the spring about park overcrowding, things like that, now's the time to travel because we've got some great deals, and there's not too many people here, so you can have a great experience.
You know, Lance, people always think southern Utah in the summer, it's hotter than blazons down there, but I know you're a higher elevation. There's a little bit of difference at Ruby's Inn, isn't there, Lance?
Absolutely. As I say, here at Ruby's Inn, we're nearly 8,000 feet in the air. So, yeah, we get a bad rap. Everybody thinks everything south of Payson is going to be extremely hot in the summertime. But being at 8,000 feet, you know, if it gets up to 90 here, we're all dying. And, yeah, it's a great place to come. You know, we get a lot of people that come out of St. George and places like that. They come up here to beat the heat. So we're kind of the other southern Utah, and it's a great place to come and travel to. Especially right before school starts, you know, a lot of people think we're on the other side of the planet down here, but we're, you know, once you hit Payson, we're about a little over 3 hours to get here to Bryce Canyon, so we're definitely not the other side of the planet.
Have you noticed a difference in the tourists this year? I know in the past, when I've been down there in southern Utah, you see a lot of international travelers, but this year, has it been a little bit different, Lance?
Oh, absolutely. As I say, with international borders still being closed and man, we've just had a lot of people. You know, it's funny because we've had a lot of people come from the Salt Lake area, a lot of people come from the Wasatch Front, and I'll tell you, it's funny to meet people from Utah that have lived here the whole life, and maybe they're 60 years old and they've never been to Bryce Canyon, but they came this year because of COVID and, you know, lack of options when things were, you know, closed down. So, yeah, it's a lot different. Usually you come down here, you'll hear more German or French Italian being spoken than the other language. But, yeah, there's a lot of English this year. But it's fun. It's fun to see people. It's always fun to see somebody from Germany come and experience Bryce for the first time. But to see somebody from Salt Lake City that's lived here their whole life in the state and never seen it, that's a lot of fun as well.
You have so many wonderful activities that you offer to people who want to go to Bryce Canyon National Park through Ruby's Inn. What are some of those activities, Lance, that people can do?
Well, you know, we've got the historical ones like the horseback riding, the ATV tours. We've got our nightly rodeo. We also have bike rentals, mountain bikes, road bikes. We've got this world-class bike path that goes from Bryce Canyon to Red Canyon. We've actually got an event coming up at the end of August called the Canyon to Canyon Bike Ride. It's not a race. It's a ride. I take my family and my little kids, and we go on there, and we ride, and there's little stations every so often. You get a drink and a treat and things like that. So that's a lot of fun. Also, you know, I'd be amiss if I didn't talk about our dinner show, our country music dinner show. You know, you got to think Branson style. You know, I don't want to throw like Tuacon, but, you know, we're one of the few places in the state that even during COVID we maintained our live entertainment. And, you know, plenty safe over there, you know, as far as, you know, what we're doing as far as cleaning and things like that. So, but anyway, our show, we feature Tim Gates, Nashville star. You know, the Bryce Canyon Wranglers. It's just a great show. And if you haven't seen that, man, that's worth your time to come and watch because that's something that happens every night right here at Bryce Canyon City.
Now, I know the food down there is always delicious, Lance. Do you want to brag it up a little bit and talk about the good, hearty meal that you'll get at Ruby's Inn?
Absolutely. Well, you know, we've got several different restaurants. We've got our fast food restaurant, the Canyon Diner. We've also got our big Cowboy Buffet and Steak Room. And if you're a fan of meat like me, then, man, I tell you, it's a good place to eat a steak. And we do have the buffet going, and you don't leave Ruby's hungry, I can tell you that. If you come in here, we're going to feed you. That goes back to my great-grandfather, Ruby, who started this place. He made sure people didn't go away hungry, I can tell you that.
All right, Lance, I know it's not that far away from the Wasatch Front if people want to travel on down. Where should they go to get all the information and make sure they book a room and get ready for a fun few days there at Ruby's Inn? Where do they need to go, Lance?
So I'll tell you, as I say, just go to our website at rubiesinn.com. You can see all the deals, all of our activities, things coming up. And just real quick, I want to give a shout-out because the Utah Symphony is reenacting their Mighty Five Forever Mighty Tour. And the Utah Symphony is going to be here next week on the 12th. There's still tickets available, still rooms available. So if you want to come and see something really special, come down and see the Utah Symphony on August 12th and get those free tickets and come and stay with us.
On our newsmaker line, Lance Syrett. He is with Ruby's Inn at the entrance of Bryce Canyon National Park talking about tourism in southern Utah this summer. All right, that does it for us tonight. Head up, shoulders back. May God bless you and your family in this great country of ours. Tune in tomorrow at 4 for Thank Rod It's Friday. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow.